From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. The lights, the sounds, the memories. Holiday music has been a generational heirloom passed down from the greats to our speakers to amplify the spirit in our homes.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better. This Christmas and
shepherd boy to the mighty king.
For most, we remember when we first heard these songs, what was cooking in the oven, and who we were with. It's a fabric of memories that continues to shape Black life during the holidays. Today on Dialogue, we're exploring the tone and tenor of Black holiday music from across the globe. Later on, you'll be hearing a live holiday performance from a Champagne choir. Joining us is Grammy Award-winning producer Errol McCullough with a career that has woven through the most innovative sounds of Black music. Today, we dive deep into the soul of Black Christmas music, exploring its roots, its revolution, and its future, with a special focus on his groundbreaking work from the incomparable Beyoncé and Destiny's Child. Errol McCullough joins me today.
Clap, clap, clap to the left, clap, clap to the right. Hey.
Hey. What's up? Welcome to the Dialogue. So can you tell us, how has Black musical tradition uniquely shaped the sound and emotion of Christmas music over the decades? And what makes these holiday tracks so distinctive?
Ooh, I would say it's the soul that Black artists put into it. You know, when you think like Black Christmas music often incorporates elements of gospel, soul, and R&B. And Black artists tend to blend, you know, rich vocal harmonies, their emotional depth, you know, the rhythmic innovation that they bring to almost everything. I think that everything they touch, they do that too. But when it comes to Christmas music, I would say, you know, it's a sense of community in the music. And all of that just deeply touches, you know, the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, yeah. You know, and it's the instrumentation, the warmth, you know, the church-like organs that we can bring, horns, you know, the strings, all the way to the powerful vocals and harmonies, you know, layered harmonies, and just really bringing some traditional gospel roots that we bring to the table.
So how do you approach producing a Christmas record?
Me personally, it is going to depend on the artist, obviously. And they're like, unless I had the vision up front and just approached an artist. But in most cases, I'll take a traditional approach and then I'll meet it with the modern. So whatever's happening modern or what we see as the future to come, that's what we'll do. So we'll blend basically tradition with modernization.
You have produced some of the industry greats, including Beyoncé and Destiny's Child, on their incredible 2001 album, 8 Days of Christmas. And their song, 8 Days of Christmas, which you produce, has over 20 million views on YouTube. And the album has been certified platinum. What was that creative process like of developing that song? And then how did you develop a sound that honored traditional Christmas auras while bringing in that contemporary vibe like you were just talking about?
I approached it from the same approach as I just mentioned. How do we take tradition and meet what's going to happen now and in the future? So the way I took that is I thought about, if you go back and look at the core, let's say rhythm, I took a marching band approach. I took my roots from marching band and I just envisioned a band going out, bump, bump, bump.
You know, Christmas was made for the cheering. Destiny's cheering. G Christmas. D Destiny's Child. Day of Christmas, my baby gave to me a pair of Chloe shades and a diamond belly ring. On the seventh day of Christmas, my baby gave to me a nice back rub, then he massaged my feet. On the sixth day of Christmas, my baby gave to me a crop jacket with
bum, 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 bum. You know, some horn sections playing that, and that's really just where I took it from first, and then everything else just built around there. We got in the studio, and you know, had fun. That was just it. Storytelling, you know, just how do we take a traditional song and turned it into our own, and that's what we did.
Yeah, well, you made more than a hit. You made something that has lasted throughout generations, and everyone remembers continuously every holiday season.
Absolutely. Yeah, they told me it's going to be our retirement package. You know, we said, all right, let's go.
Tell us, what unique artistic choices did Beyoncé make when creating 8 Days that kind of set her work apart from others?
You could just hear it. I don't even know if that's a question.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about, just go to the bridge and that entire, you know, bridge itself with her harmonic value that she brought to the table. I mean, just everything. Yeah, I mean, she's creative enough to add value to every element of the experience. Is that's what I was just overall, you know, making mention of, is that from the harmonies to how we should even structure the song to how the video should go, she was instrumental in all of that.
How do you see Black Christmas music evolving, and what emerging artists are you most excited about who are continuing to innovate?
I really like some of the artists who's bringing back some of the, let's say, traditional roots of R&B itself. However, I do want to acknowledge that there's a lot of new artists that have a different, you know, they're in a different, let's say, age group, different. They just approach things different. And I want to respect that as well. And I'm not going to name any names right now just to create any favorites or anything. But I would just say I do have my eye on working with a few of these new artists that I really feel like I could blend some tradition with their modernization with, and we could come up with something special.
And how important do you feel, as you see artistry develop over the years, how important is it to keep that tradition alive within the modern music that's evolving?
I think it's something that I think is very important. I mean, because it's kind of like where are your roots? It's like tracing the roots. Now, I think it's going to be ever evolving, but it's still, if we continue to blend, you know, 10, 20 years back, I think we'll still continue to capture the roots, because if we go 10, 20 years back when we were sampling and redoing, we were doing the same. We were reaching back 10 or 20 years. So I think if we all just continue to acknowledge at least the last 10, 20 years, we'll still have elements of the past into our new music.
I love that. Errol, thank you so much for being here and dropping all of your wisdom with music with us today.
I am gracious. Thank you for having me.
That was Errol McCullough, a Grammy Award-winning producer. Up next, Dr. Mark Anthony Neal joins the conversation on taking a look back at all of the traditional classics we love.
Black artists historically have taken traditional Christmas music and adapted it to a sonic quality that would resonate for Black audiences.
Stay with us on Dialogue after this short break. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Today on Dialogue, we're exploring the tone and tenor of Black holiday music from across the globe. Dr. Mark Anthony Neal is a scholar, cultural critic, and sonic architect of Black musical consciousness. He has spent decades illuminating the intricate tapestry of Black musical expression and transforming how we understand rhythm, resistance, and cultural memory. His groundbreaking work at Duke University has redefined the academic approach to Black pop culture, bringing the depth and complexity of Black musical traditions into a sharper focus. We're honored to have Professor Mark Anthony Neal join us today.
I'm glad to be on. Thank you for having me.
Holiday music is often dismissed as commercial or too sentimental, but your work reveals a much deeper narrative. How do Black holiday songs serve us more than just seasonal soundtracks, but as archives of cultural memory and Black celebration?
I think the thing that's most important is that, you know, Black artists historically have taken traditional Christmas music and adapted it to a sonic quality that would resonate for Black audiences. Whether it's covering Silent Night or Away in the Manger or writing original songs, the idea was to capture the holiday mood in a way that felt culturally specific and culturally authentic to Black audiences, Black listeners.
So what hidden histories do some of these songs carry that mainstream narratives often overlook?
You know, I think about James Brown has a great song called Santa Claus in the Ghetto.
Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto.
And, you know, there's this whole narrative around Christmas. You know, if you were Black and working class in particular, the idea that some white Santa Claus came to your apartment and came down a fireplace that didn't exist, and you had two or sometimes only one working class parent, you know, working 50, 60 hours a week to be able to pay for toys, you know, a song like, you know, James Brown, Santa Claus in the Ghetto, you know, spoke about the fact that how for many Black folks, that narrative of the traditional Christmas just didn't work in our lives. I think about another song by Clarence Carter called Backdoor Santa, right? And it's about, you know, infidelity, right? And someone dressed as Santa Claus, you know, sneaking into the back door. You know, it's humorous and it's funny, but it also kind of resonates in terms of a kind of reality for Black life.
How do these musical traditions speak to broader experiences of Black joy and survival?
I mean, that's the critical thing. I don't think many Black folks celebrate Christmas on face value. They celebrate Christmas because it's a time at the end of the year to reflect on a long year, to be able to share gifts with each other, to be able to come together as both family and also community. And so I think Christmas always meant something beyond that. And the music, you know, whether it's reflecting the sounds of the 50s and the 60s, or I'm thinking about Boys to Men and Let It Snow, whether or not it reflected the sound of R&B in the 1990s. It was always about bringing people together and being hopeful for the new year. You know, one of Stevie Wonder's great compositions, regardless of all the great pop songs he's written, you know, he wrote a song or sang a song called Someday at Christmas.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas. Christmas, there'll be no wars.
You know, which was released in the mid-1960s, Motown Records, of course. And the way that it talked about peace and freedom without actually naming it very specifically in a political discourse, but it is always a song that's resonated for Black audiences or Black folks, because it was almost a feeling of Afrofuturism, right? Imagining what a peaceful future might be like for us.
From Donny Hathaway's This Christmas to more contemporary holiday tracks, there's a profound emotional landscape in Black holiday music that really transcends simple nostalgia. And what makes these songs such powerful vehicles for understanding Black familial spaces and experiences, specifically when we gather together?
I mean, Black Christmas music, Black holiday music had to be authentic. It had to sound like the music that Black folks wanted to listen to anyway. A lot of the songs obviously doubled down on Black gospel traditions. A lot of the songs, even from those who were pop stars at the time, you know, also resonated in a style that was familiar to Black folks. You know, holiday music and Christmas music is always about that coming together. I think about, you know, there's a version of the Temptations' Silent Night. And you know, they made two Christmas albums, both extraordinary, but very different. And in the second album, they do a version of Silent Night, and you can hear Dennis Edwards, you know, he begins with, you know, In My Mind.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In my mind.
And the way that simple little phrase has gone viral. Every Christmas, you know, you go on social media and someone will be like, you know, I can't start Christmas until I hear Dennis Edwards with those opening lines in my mind. It's just always a way about gathering. You know, I think about Marvin Gaye, who did a very political song in the 1970s called I Want to Be Home for Christmas.
To kiss my baby.
Which was about, you know, Black military men who were fighting in Vietnam who wanted to be home for Christmas. It's never just about the giving of gifts. It's never just about recognizing Jesus's birthday, though that's an important part of it. It's always something more, right? You know, if Black folks have the opportunity to sing and gather, you know, it goes back to Amiri Baraka's great phrase, you know, which he took for some, you know, West African proverbs, the spirit does not descend unless there's music. That's the same thing when we talk about Christmas music for Black folks or holiday music.
In Black families, there's also a complexity of gathering together. How do some of these songs capture the complexity of Black family gatherings?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many songs. You know, because I'm a fan of Christmas music. You know, the Temptations, I go back again, their first Christmas album, which was called Christmas Card. And Eddie Kendrick sings the lead, and he talks about, you know, the Christmas tree.
At my door, but my Christmas tree doesn't look the same as it always has before.
How important it was just to have a single Christmas tree, no matter what it looked like. You mentioned Donny Hathaway earlier, you know, this Christmas, right? There's a kind of urgency to this moment that whatever we're going through in our lives at the time, we expect the best out of this particular moment, you know, in terms of Black family life and the dynamics of Black life.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna get to know you better.
this Christmas. And as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together.
You know, Christmas is a difficult time for many people. For working class and poor Black folks, it's a reminder of the kind of economic inequity that exists in this country, right? We can't celebrate Christmas and spend money the way we see some of our peers and the way it's depicted on television. We all have, you know, generations of remembering, you know, Black parents and Black grandparents, great grandparents, who talk about, you know, Christmas was an orange and a nickel and a peppermint stick. But the thing that always mattered is that folks came back and came home together. Even when there's tensions in the family where folks aren't getting along, you know, parents and adult children are not getting along, Christmas is that one opportunity. The holiday season more broadly, whether it's Christmas or Kwanzaa or even Hanukkah, you know, is an opportunity to put a pause on all those tensions and just remind folks why family is important.
You've written extensively about how Black musical traditions transform seemingly mainstream cultural forms. How do Black artists reimagine holiday music as a space of cultural reclamation and cultural resistance?
You know, again, Christmas wasn't our holiday. And to find a way to make sure that these cultural references to our lives, you know, I think about Otis Redding, who has a song called Merry Christmas, Baby.
Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice? Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice?
Very popular Stax 1960s, but it was a cover of a blues song from an earlier generation. The reason why that song resonated is because, you know, both younger audiences and older audiences could remember. When you think about, you know, this performance of a song like White Christmas, that's done by one of these doo-wop bands in the 1950s. And it's the style of doo-wop music, right? It's not Bing Crosby. Right. It's Black artists saying, no, this is going to be our version of the song. And then, of course, when you think about Nat King Cole and the Christmas song, again, it's not his song. Right. And he adapted it to his own style. And it became so significant that it might be, other than Mariah Carey, now the most well-known Christmas song. And his version of it is the most well-known of that song.
How do these musical interventions kind of challenge dominant narratives about our celebrations as African Americans?
So, you know, it's really an extension of what Black folks have historically done around gospel and spirituals. You know, taking these European spirituals, taking these traditional gospel hymns and imbuing them with this sensitivity distinctly Black, right? Whether it's in terms of the rhythmic structure of the songs, whether it's the use of these harmonies that we all know, whether it's the deployment of that kind of melisma, the way we bend and shake and shift notes instead of singing them straight. We see the same thing in holiday music, right? And I think it's a reminder that for many artists, holiday music really is an extension of our Black spiritual and Black church traditions in terms of singing, and they treat the songs with that kind of sensibility.
So for younger generations that are a bit disconnected from older musical traditions, what wisdom can they learn from these holiday musical archives?
I think when you go back and listen to, and I'll give an example, you know, my favorite Christmas album is Jackson 5 Christmas. Michael Jackson's 10 or 11 years old. My mother gave it to me as a gift for my seventh birthday in 1972. The album had came out the year before. I think if you go back and you listen to the number of Christmas albums that have been done by Black artists, you don't just hear a celebration of the holidays. You still hear the best music that they were capable of producing. I don't think any of the Christmas music that would fit into the Black tradition is watered down for holiday consumption, right? It is still great music. You know, even when the late Quincy Jones got together with a who's who of Black performers in 1992 to do a soulful rendition of Handel's Messiah, it was such an incredible contribution, not just to Black life in America, but an updating of that story in a way that resonated not just for Black Americans, but so many other Americans, right? Because, you know, as we understand now in 2024, you know, Black musical styles, for all intents and purposes, are the most popular forms of popular music in America today, right? So as younger folks listen to these larger traditions, whether it's Charles Brown in the 1940s or Otis Redding and the Supremes in the 1960s, or Jackson 5 in the 1970s, or again, Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men in the 1990s, you are still hearing the best that Black music has to offer.
As we witness ongoing cultural debates about representation and authenticity, what role do these holiday musical traditions play in preserving and reimagining Black cultural identity?
It makes a clear statement that there is something called Black cultural identity, that we have not all been subsumed in the American machine, that we've lost a sense of who we are in our cultural practices, whether those cultural practices are Kwanzaa or Christmas. Many Black folks, in fact, celebrate both, right? Because they do represent two different, right? Christmas is a hearkening back to the holidays of our childhood. Kwanzaa is an opportunity to double down on what our political beliefs are at this point in time and what we're hoping for the future.
Dr. Mark Anthony Neal, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Kennedy.
That was Professor Dr. Mark Anthony Neal at Duke University. He has redefined the academic approach to Black popular culture. Up next, we'll be hearing a live choir performance from the Bethel AME Church Choir. The church was first established in 1863. Stay with us on Dialogue after this short break. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Today on Dialogue, we're exploring the tone and tenor of Black holiday music from across the globe. Long before commercial Christmas albums, enslaved Africans transformed European carols into powerful expressions of faith and freedom. Spirituals like Go Tell It on a Mountain weren't just songs. They were coded messages of liberation. Hope whispered through these melodies when speaking openly meant danger. For centuries, the Black church has been far more than a place of worship. It's been the beating heart of the African-American community, from the earliest days of slavery to the front lines of the civil rights movement and through today's complex social landscape. Dialogue invited the Bethel AME Church in Champaign to our studios for a live performance of gospel classics for this holiday season. The church was established in 1863, and many local families are still attending the church today. And right now, you will hear them sing So Many Wonderful Things by Dr. Charles G. Hayes.
So many.
joined with Minister Deborah K. Banks. Her family has been attending the Bethel AME Church for generations. And Minister Banks, I want to ask you, what does it mean to carry this legacy on as you're here today with the church?
Well, it means a lot. Sometimes you see things on TV about people that have, you know, a legacy and how it's gone all the way back. But to actually be a part of it, it's a blessing. My grandfather on my mom's side, he was the church organist and he was over the choir. For a better word, it just went on down to me because it's like it's just always been in me. I love it. It's both sides of the family, Banks and Popes. We kind of like the backbone of the church. And also means that, you know, you want to be a part in the community to be an example and to represent, because, you know, people are people and they'll say, are you a Banks? Are you a Pope? Yes, I am. So they're going to be looking at you a certain way. But if you just be yourself, it'll work out, you know, and everybody on both sides of the family have been a great blessing to this community. It means a great deal to me. And I'm very proud of them. I love them, you know, quite naturally they're up in heaven, but I still love them. And I'm very proud to be a Banks and a Pope.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel this responsibility to continue being involved in the church and just speaking the word of God?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. You know, it's not one of those things like, well, I'm done, you know. No, it's like, no, we have to keep this going so that we're a blessing, because they were a blessing.
Right now, you're listening to the Bethel AME Church Choir singing Hallelujah, Salvation and Glory by Jeffrey LaValle.
Hallelujah.
Polly Washington joining me, the choir director. Thank you so much for being here and bringing everyone out for that beautiful performance. Choirs make it look easy, and there's magic within your performance. There's a lot of practice within your performance. Can you walk us through how long it takes to prepare for some of these pieces?
It doesn't take as long for us to do it because they're very diligent in listening to the YouTube, looking at the words, and then when we get to the choir, it may take us an hour or so or a couple of hours.
What is the connection to traditional gospel and certain holiday songs? Is there a different way that you conduct those pieces versus non-holiday songs?
No, we're praising all of them, okay? Because the whole message is about Jesus, whether it's in holiday or out of season. So one of the things that I can say about our choir is that they're very spirit-filled. And so when they come into rehearsal, they're ready to rehearse and they're ready to lift up the name of Jesus.
Alongside being the director, you know, you sing in the choir too. And I'm sure you've been doing this for many years. You've been the director for 30 years. Tell us, what does singing in the choir do for your soul? What does it do for your spirit? And how do you continue to connect with the music? What does gathering in communion with everybody feel like? And what does it do for your spirit?
Music has been part of my life in terms of singing. Always loved to sing. And I sang in my grade school choir, my high school choir, here at the University of Illinois when I came. I sang in, you know, with the Black chorus. And I do want to mention that I checked out a lot of choirs, you know, while I was here at the university. And I happened to go to Bethel with a couple of friends, and I heard that sound. And at that time, Deborah Banks was over the choir. And I said, I'm going to get in that choir. And so when I came back for my senior year, I made sure I went to Bethel to join that choir. And I've been in the choir ever since. And this was in 1972, okay? I love the people because you can get disgruntled and everything, but one thing about our choir members, I mean, we love on each other. Our present day pastor, he preaches that now, you know, you love on each other. Talk out if there's a problem and then everything will be all right. So music has been a part of my life in terms of singing.
The Black Choir has been a staple of the Black Church since we were brought to this country and even before. We have been listening to these hymns for generations. What do these hymns do to us as we sit, as we listen, as we observe, as we come together?
They help us remember where we came from. They help us remember what our forefathers had done. Okay, I love the hymns. Hymns do a different thing to me than gospel music. Gospel music does great for me, but just singing the old hymns and just picturing what our forefathers went through so that we could be here with the freedoms that we have right now, it makes a lot of difference to me. And that's why I think the hymns should stay. You know, Amazing Grace, Precious Lord, Blessed Assurance. Those things just resonates in your soul. How to reach the masses. It tells you what to do. You can't reach the masses being silent. You have to talk. And you have to get out there and project yourself.
Polly Washington, thank you so much, and thank you to your incredible choir. Stay tuned for a special feature performance of a gospel classic by the Bethel AME Church in just a moment. But first, this announcement. You can find the Dialogue podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And you can give us a follow on Instagram and Facebook at Illinois Soul. This Dialogue show was produced by James Treichler, Taylor Planton, DJ Roach, Troy McDonald, and myself, Kennedy Vincent. Our news and public affairs director is Reginald Hardwick, and production assistance by Steve Mork. Dialogue is a part of Illinois Soul and Illinois Public Media. Join us for our next Dialogue every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1 and WILL AM 580 Wednesdays at 8 p.m. And now for their last song, the Bethel AME Church performing Emmanuel by Norman Hutchins.